Welcome, welcome, dear podcast listeners, to another episode of Between the Bubbles podcast. I'm Darren.
And I am Brayden.
And funny thing we have to share. So this is our second recording. We actually recorded this episode about, 3 hours ago?
Three, 4 hours ago. We were in my house. We were sitting at our kitchen table in our normal spots.
And the microphone sensitivity was a little wacky, and we didn't realize it till Brayden was editing. And the whole
consequently, there was tons of echo, like you would hear things and then hear them again fraction of a second later. And it was on both ends, so it was just impossible for me to try to edit it out.
So here we are recording our second attempt, and we're doing it over Skype because now I'm back in my home in Davenport. So the great thing is, though, is that Brayden and I can, second time, you can be more concise, you can have a better idea of what you want to say because you already said it. So here we go. This will be fun, but anyway, so we have some great news. We have some great reviews.
It's going to be a good episode. We got two tries at it, so it's bound to be our best episode ever.
Let's hope so. If not, then hey, what are you going to do with us? The great news that we're going to talk about, we have some director choices for Warner Brothers, which makes me and Brayden personally freaked out about. We have Brayden's going to gush over the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show news. We have some reviews of The Flash and Green Lantern Annual, The Big Kiss with Superman and Wonder Woman and Justice League. We have Brayden's going to talk about some great comics.
Oh, yeah. I had a good week. And some really disappointing things, too.
Yeah. A lot of independents, such as New Dead Wardians isn't really independent, but it's definitely not mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And some Image, IDW. So America's Got Powers. Brayden was gushing over that before.
Really
good stuff. So let's get started on news. And before we start on this, I really need to premise this with something, because I feel like with Warner Brothers, they have one of those defining moments like we all have in our lives where something's placed before us, and it will, no matter how it happens or what the results are, good or bad, it will define us and it will change us. And in those moments, in those situations that are presented to us in our life, we can either rise to the occasion and succeed and grab the bull by the horns and soar with it, or we can buckle under pressure, fall flat, fail, and live with the regrets and consequences for the rest of our life. And I feel like Warner Brothers is at that pinnacle moment right now with the Justice League movie. And this will, I actually think it will define Warner Brothers, because
it'll definitely define at least Legendary Pictures, which is where they put out all of their superhero flicks.
Yeah, and the thing is they have owned the rights to all the DC characters, where Marvel had to buy back rights or navigate things, and they made an amazing movie with the Avengers. Mm-hmm. And now with the Justice League, we don't know what's going to happen. There's been a lot of reports that it's kind of getting a faulty start, getting off the ground. Brayden and I both feel like that Warner Brothers shouldn't do it, and this is further why. There's been a list that's come out of potential directors for the Justice League movie.
Dire list.
Oh, the Wachowskis. Yes, they did the Matrix trilogy, but of the Matrix trilogy, which movie is good?
The first one.
2 wasn't that great. 3 was terrible. Brayden, you said you like Speed Racer. I have personally never seen it.
I just like the way Speed Racer looked. Story-wise, it was a joke, but it was gorgeous to look at. And I'm really excited about their version of Cloud Atlas, but I just don't feel like their direction and their style of filmmaking is at all conducive to a Justice League movie.
No, not at all. Because the Justice League movie, as Mark Miller has said, is written by Will Beale, and he is making it gritty, he's making it a little bit darker. It feels more like the Christopher Nolan Batman movies than it does the Avengers, and I can't see them doing something like that. Then next we have Brett Ratner,
who's horrible all the time.
Do we really need to even, why is his name even an option I don't understand. The report is that they really like what he's done with production and some of his movies, which
in
Rush
what movie?
Hour.
The Rush Hour movies are horrible. X3 was a monstrosity. Like, there is nothing to
there's
recommend
nothing redeemable.
Him as a director. Nothing.
There's nothing redeemable. And then Ruben Fleischer, who, yes, he's done Zombieland, and he did in less than 10 minutes. Is that the name of that movie?
30 with minutes or high, less.
30 minutes or less. The 10 minutes was another short he did. And look, Zombieland, I haven't seen. Brayden, you've seen it, and you said it was really good.
Oh, it's astonishing. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know that his style is that of... I just don't know if he can pull it off. Now, granted, Marvel has surprised me with the quality of the films they've put out, with the directorial choices they've made. In fact, one of the weaker of their films leading up to the Avengers was, at least in my mind, was The Incredible Hulk. And that was a Louis Leterrier movie. He knows how to direct an action scene. A lot of these other ones, Jon Favreau, he'd never done really action before. Joss Whedon had never done a big budget thing before. So I know it can be done by people who I don't expect to do a good job, but not necessarily these people.
No, and then
McGee
is
horrible
awful.
On Terminator Salvation.
Yeah, and then Zack Snyder was the last one on the list. And look, depending on Man of Steel, I had the highest hopes for him. I think he could do a good Justice League movie. But once again, it's not something that really sticks out to the mind of, that's the director. Where when he had Joss Whedon chosen, everyone knew that is a perfect choice. And I think Warner Brothers is going to screw this movie up. I think they're going to fall flat, and they're going to fail. And it's going to define, like you said, Legendary Pictures. I'm not looking forward to this at all.
Yeah, I don't think it'll turn out good. But let's talk about good news
regarding
multimedia stuff. The TV show that Joss Whedon has been hired to work on is apparently moving forward. It's called S.H.I.E.L.D. at this point. They're working on a pilot right now. Joss Whedon is working with his brother Jed Whedon and his brother's wife, Marissa Tancharan. They're the people who worked on Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog and Dollhouse together, so these are people who know how to work together. Jed and Marissa will be the showrunners, with Joss popping in to help as he can. And in every interview that he's given in the last week, he's given a lot of support to the idea that, you know, this is still not a for sure thing. We still got to work out some things, but this is the show we want to make. This is not us just trying to conform to what Marvel wants. This is the show that we really think needs to be made. And so it's talk that it will be a prequel to the Avengers movies, which means hopefully we can get some Agent Coulson back in the house.
Yes. Because
I would love for him to come back.
Oh, yeah. And if any of you have read, we have a blog now, blog.betweenthebubbles.com. And I wrote an article about how all the Avenger movies tie in together. And if you've read it, you've noticed that I really want Agent Coulson back alive. And the thing is, look, I know he's dead. There's no way that Joss Whedon is going to bring him back. But this is a perfect way to satisfy fans of the Avengers movie and of Phil Coulson, because yes, his death still is permanent and you don't diminish it or cheapen it,
but we can get some more Clark Gregg.
Yes, exactly. And I hope that's the case, because that is a perfect way to make everyone happy.
Yeah, the goal is to make it a show that people who are Marvel Universe junkies will love it, as well as people who've never even seen a single one of the movies.
And I really do think Joss Whedon can pull it off.
I hope he can pull it off. I really do.
Well, next bit of news, and this is once again really sad, is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that Michael Bay is doing. And if you've been paying attention online, you know that the script has been out leaked and has been panned. In fact, this is the most interesting thing. Peter Laird, who is a co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, looked at the script, and this is quoting him. This is exactly what he said. "I think the script that I read is so fundamentally flawed and, more to the point, so not a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that trying to make a piecemeal changes to it in an effort to make it into something halfway decent is probably a fool's errand. In my opinion, the thing should be tossed out, deliberately forgotten, and the process of generating a new script, really a new outline, then treatment, then script, should be started again." Wow. If the co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is going to make a statement that strong, and I love the first sentence, "the script that I read is so fundamentally flawed."
Yeah, what? That's really a smash bang. Yeah, there's no coming back from this. I don't care what. I know Michael Bay has made some things about, oh, it's an old script from 2 years ago, but from before I was even on it.
No,
the script is dated January, and he's been working on it for 2 years. So that's clearly a lie. But the important thing is, it's just not going to turn out good.
No, it's not. And the people, look, Michael Bay ruined my childhood with Transformers, and he's going to ruin it even more Ninja Turtles. And I,
you
for whatever reason, people still watch Transformers. I don't know why it made so much money that it did, but stay away from this. Do not support this because it just encourages him to ruin more of our memories.
It's very, very true. Now, I'm going to have to get up on my soapbox here for a second, listeners. I am tired. I'm sick and tired of going on forums and comment boards and all that kind of stuff and seeing things about Michael Bay raping your childhood. He did not rape your childhood. You can say that he ruined a nostalgia property that you liked when you were a child. But, I mean, if someone made a crappy movie about the Easy Bake Oven, would you say that he raped your child? No. Stop blowing things out of proportion and stop delegitimizing something that is as life-changing and fundamentally wrong as rape by using it as a euphemism or as a replacement for my feelings got a little hurt because he didn't make the movie I wanted him to make with something from my childhood.
The thing that upsets me the most when people use that statement is because when you say rape my childhood, I automatically think of child rape. And especially with the whole Jerry Sandusky Penn State thing that happened, how many kids were raped on Penn State campus and it was covered. It's
just not something to joke about, guys.
No, it's not.
It Your really, childhood really was in no way, shape, or form raped. Are you unhappy with the film? Great. Say, I hated that movie. That's fine. But don't say he raped your
please
childhood.
Please use something jerks. Else. Please use a different word. And I know mm-hmm. some people aren't meaning to be disrespectful, but...
So understand, we don't mean this because we hate you. We mean this because we hate the misappropriation of the word rape.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Last bit of news. Avengers versus X-Men.
This is big.
Right in.
If you haven't seen it, the teasers for issue 12... is a silhouette of the Dark Phoenix. So what's with that teaser? Some people are thinking Jean Grey is going to come back as the Dark Phoenix. I don't think that's the case. We have killed Jean Grey and brought her back too many times. I don't think it's going to be Jean Grey. But there is no shortage, as we talked about earlier, of women in the Marvel Universe with curly red hair. It could be Wanda, the Scarlet Witch. It could be Hope. It could be Rachel Gray, Jean Grey's little sister, who has hosted the Phoenix not once but twice before. So, I mean, it could be anyone. But things are going to get hairy in the end of AVX. That's all I have to say.
Who do you think it's going to be?
My money is on Hope, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I look, not to sound redundant, I hope it is Hope because... I really do not like Cyclops. I think Cyclops
is a jerk. He's one of my least favorite comic book heroes.
And I hate calling him a hero because to me he's not a hero. But
he's a fascist. If you've been reading the last 5 years worth of X-Men books, Cyclops is a fascist. There's a reason why, even though there's only 200 mutants left on the planet, they have split into these two factions, Cyclops X-Men and Wolverine's X-Men. And
keep going.
I don't get why anyone would follow or deal with or give any credence to Cyclops. So I don't, anyway.
Well, the reason why I hope it's Hope is because he already probably blames himself, and I don't follow X-Men that much, so correct me if I'm wrong, but he probably blames himself for the death of Jean Grey and the Dark Phoenix. So to have Hope be the Dark Phoenix and then the results of what happens to her, that's just going to further destroy him inside. And look, I don't wish that upon anybody in real life, but the great thing about movies and comic books and novels is that
you can cheer when the bad guy gets their due.
Yes, yes, you can. And I cheer that Cyclops gets his due in this situation.
Yeah.
So, anyway, hey, well, that's our news for this week. Stay tuned because we'll talk about our many, many different reviews. All right, welcome back to our review section, and let's get started real quick.
Brayden, boy, do we have a lot to do this week.
Yes, we do, and we're actually reviewing a company that we haven't done yet on the podcast, Boom Studios.
Yeah, This is the first Boom book I've ever bought. I was kind of hopeful because it's called Steed and Mrs. Peel. If for those of you who don't know, they are the main characters of the old 60s British spy show The Avengers, which I was a huge fan of when I was a kid. I would watch reruns of it in the mornings before I went to school, and I really, really liked it. So I was
really excited. I'd watch Garfield. I always watched Garfield before school.
My little sisters really liked Garfield, but I watched Avengers and MASH because I'm an old man in my heart. Anyway.
It's so true. That is so true. Anyway, keep going.
Very true. Anyway, I got this book because I love the Avengers TV show. I love Mark Waid, who wrote it. And let me tell you, it was really disappointing. And it was a waste of my $4, and you should ignore it. Because it doesn't capture the feel of the show at all. It just didn't work in any way, shape, or form. I did not like it, and pass. So, ignore.
Wow, so is it like the Avengers, because the TV show had a movie with Ralph Fiennes and
Uma Thurman. And it was horrible, and this is worse.
Well, this is, wow, that is saying something. Well,
yep, it was
there
bad.
There you go. Sorry, Boom Studios.
So I'm sorry, and I'm sorry, Mark Waid, because I don't know if you'll ever hear this. I thought after 18 great issues of Daredevil that I could trust anything you put out, but this one wasn't great. I'm sorry, man.
Rocketeer.
Rocketeer didn't work for me either. I know a lot worked for a lot of other people, but this one's getting pretty universally panned, so I feel a little more comfortable in my distaste for this one. But it makes me a little nervous about the Indestructible Hulk.
Well, yeah, me too, because that was the one title I'm looking forward to the most out of Marvel now. And I thought I could trust Mark Waid because, yeah, Daredevil is amazing. Kingdom Come is amazing. So,
we'll keep our fingers crossed for Indestructible Hulk, but we'll see.
Now, instead of inflating my hope, you know, I can at least have
level grounded standards.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Keep me grounded. Well, now let's move on to DC, and a lot of the DC chunk is me. First off, Aquaman issue 12. This was a great, great issue. Just like almost every issue before, it has been amazing. Aquaman has just been total revamped and redone and turned into one of the coolest DC superheroes because of what Geoff Johns is doing. He's really added to the mythos of Aquaman, to his past, to the characters around him, just like he did with Hal Jordan in Green Lantern. And Aquaman is all the better for it. The thing that I love the most about Aquaman right now, and especially in this story arc with the others, who are basically a C version of the Justice League, and Geoff Johns is making Black Manta one of the best arch nemesis in all of comics. If you
like Joker level,
I want to say Joker level.
Well, no one's Joker level, but
yeah, no one's Joker
like
level.
Green Goblin level.
Oh yeah, definitely. I would say definitely Green Goblin. I wouldn't say he's Lex Luthor level either, but oh yeah, he's up there. He's just sinister, he's evil, and just like Green Goblin, just wants to destroy Aquaman's life. Because he knows who Aquaman is. He knows that it's Arthur Curry, and just like Green Goblin knew Peter Parker was Spider-Man. And it's a really interesting dynamic. And as I was saying, if you love Young Justice, and you like how Black Manta's portrayed there, you'll love him even more in this Aquaman series. It's phenomenal. There's great insight into what drives Aquaman to be solo, because you're starting to see snippets that he wants to leave everyone that he loves out of his life. And for him, it's to protect them, but he doesn't really explain why. And I think you're going to see more of that in later issues. My personal feeling is because his dad died, and he feels like it's because of him, so he wants to push people away. But there is one thing I want to read in here. One scene with one of the others, it's Vastog. And Vastog, if you don't know, he was a Russian spaceman who was just up on the moon for scientific experiments and isolated and by himself. And he came recently back down to Earth, and as I was saying, Aquaman is trying to push everyone away because he doesn't want them to die. But Vastog actually gives up his life for Arthur, and there's some things that Vastog really says that just struck out to me. He says, "There is no need to be sorry. Don't you see, Arthur? My greatest fear has been vanquished and my greatest hope granted." I didn't die alone. Make sure you don't either. And then he just closes his eye and dies. And everyone's weeping and crying. It was a very powerful scene. It's poignant. The thing that struck me the most is this is what Arthur needed to realize, that he needs to bring his loved ones into his life and not push them away. And it was a great way of doing that. And I'm going to give this issue, total adore it. I cannot wait till issue 13 to see how it ends, because as I was saying, Black Manta is one of the top villains in DC. He's incredible.
That's awesome.
So, next up, we have the Flash Annual. And
you were really excited about this book last week.
Oh, I'm wearing my Flash shirt right now because of this book. This was my favorite pickup of this week. And I was saying last week with issue 12 that people had complaints that it was really fast. You don't really get to see why the rogues, or it's not explained why the rogues are doing what they're doing. And I was saying, whoa. Listen.
Have some faith.
Have some faith. It will all be explained in the annual. And I was right. This focused not on the Flash, but this focused on Leonard Snart, who is Captain Cold. And it was all the better for it.
It's a horrible name, by the way.
Leonard Snart, I know, but it was made in, what, the 40s? So, there you go. But they always call him Len. But he, you dive into why he is so angry at the Flash in previous issues. Because he blames the Flash for something, you're wondering what's going on. But it dives into why he's angry at the Flash, why he has superhuman powers, why Heatwave and the Weather Wizard. It's more than like the pre-continuity where it was more machines, but now it's an actual part of them, and you see why that happens. You see why you should really hate Dr. Elias. And I always love issues and stories that are focused on the villains, because we always have stories that are focused on the heroes. It's nice to have a change. It would have been very easy to focus on the Flash in the annual, but no, it's Brian Buccellato and Francis Manapul. They nailed it with focusing on Captain Cold and the rogues. And pick this issue up. It will make you want to read all the previous Flash stories, because there are snippets in almost every issue that are tied into this annual. And the one thing I had, the knock I have, is that it's done in 5 chapters, which I really like that, actually. But there's different artists, and so sometimes the art's really good, sometimes the art is okay. But still, this issue in this annual, favorite of the week, total adore it, makes me love Barry Allen, and now it makes me love Captain Cold even more, because it's just, it was great insight. It makes him more of a complex and intriguing character. So,
for sure.
Now, still me.
Well, that's because you love these DC characters, man.
I do, and I really can't help it. I've tried to branch out,
and but you still pick up the things you love.
Oh, so true. So, Green Lantern Annual. Green Lantern. I had some high hopes for this. I didn't want to be disappointed, because I have always loved the crossover events of Green Lantern. And Geoff Johns, you did not disappoint. The one thing that I love the most, though, of the Green Lantern Annual is the return of artist Ethan Van Sciver. He was the one that did Green Lantern Rebirth, which if you haven't read, you need to read. He's the one that was the artist for the first year or so of Green Lantern. And in my opinion, even though Ivan Reiss is a beautiful artist, I don't think he compares to Ethan Van Sciver at all. Because it's grittier, it's darker, it's more realistic, and it just, to me, fits perfectly for the Green Lantern universe. Mm-hmm. And it really sets up for the crossover of the Third Army. You see how far, far down the dark hole that the Guardians have become. And the cool thing as well is that you see other Guardians that aren't part of the leaders of the Green Lantern Corps. Mm-hmm. Because there is the first Green Lantern, who I'm guessing is evil and powerful. And so the Guardians split in two groups. One that we know from the Green Lantern universe, and others that stayed in his prison in this little tiny box for what, billions of years, however long that they've been the Guardians of the universe.
Yeah.
And they have cool costumes that looks very medieval but scientific, and it was a beautiful design. And you see a clash with the two factions of the Guardians, and I won't explain it now, I'll do it my villain moment of the week, but wow, Ganthet, you are evil. And the thing as well is there's some huge repercussions with Hal Jordan and Sinestro. I'm going to give you a warning right now, spoiler. If you don't want to know, then skip the next 30 seconds or so. Okay, there's your moment to skip.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Hal Jordan and Sinestro die. They actually die. And I hope it's not permanent because I love their buddy cop, good cop, bad cop dynamic in the Green Lantern story. But wow, I was not expecting that to happen. And it was gutsy, but it worked. And the last thing, and the only complaint I have is you see the Third Army, what they look like. I was a little disappointed. I feel like they looked like just funky looking Frankenstein / zombie characters. But it still was a phenomenal issue. It will get you very excited for the Third Army crossover. You don't have to read anything else to get into this. It will make more sense if you've been keeping up to why the Guardians are doing the things that they're doing, but still, great annual. You can definitely check out the crossover, which I recommend you do, and I'm giving a total adore it. Love the Green Lantern annual.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
So, all right. Next up is Justice League. Oh, man. Justice League.
So how was it? It's been all the talk of all of the sites this last week.
Yes, it has. The big kiss. Wonder Woman, Superman. Was it legit? Did it work? Did it fall flat in its face? I'll get that at the end, but let's start off with David Graves. David Graves was the villain who I thought was boring. Then I got maybe a little intrigued by in issue 11. And this is now official in issue 12. David Graves sucks as a villain. He is boring. He's not interesting. And they try to do the whole creepy. It reminded me of like Shredder with his costume. And it just, I didn't like it. It didn't work. And so the first five pages you can skip. Whatever. The interesting part is the middle. The middle is what really, and it's great because there's really no action in the middle. It's all character development. There are two characters that I thought really shined in this issue. One is Steven Trevor, which I won't explain now because that's my hero moment of the week. So I won't get into it, but he has a great interaction with Wonder Woman that will make anyone who's been a jilted lover, you're going to love it. The thing I want to focus on is Hal Jordan, because Hal Jordan, as we know, is cocky and arrogant, and especially in this Justice League series. But the thing is David Graves caused everyone to doubt the Justice League and their purpose. And the Justice League themselves even doubt themselves and going in, well, are we gods? Can we protect and save everyone? Or do we just focus on the big events and the greater good? And Hal Jordan, at the end of this discussion, says, "We're not gods, Flash. When we do what we do on the scale, we do it, people get hurt. The fact is, the Justice League can save the Earth every day. We can't save everybody on it every day. But that doesn't mean the League shouldn't try. And to keep doing that, we need the world's support. And that is why I'm quitting. Because Hal Jordan is the one that got this firestorm started. He punched Wonder Woman in public. They got in a fight. Everyone saw it. And he's the reason. And he is doing the heroic and hard thing by walking away to save the Justice League because they can save the Earth." And I love that Hal Jordan was the one to do this. It could have been Superman. It could have been Batman. The fact that the cocky, arrogant flyboy is the one that made this hard decision, is the one that made the poignant point of who they really are. And granted, he has to leave because of the crossover. That's going to happen, Green Lantern, in the main title, but still.
And, you know, spoiler alert again, skip 10 seconds ahead, and he died, you know.
Yeah, so you can't have that continuity issue. So now let's go to the kiss. The kiss. The interaction.
Stupid kiss.
You know what? It actually is stupid. I'm going to say it. This is stupid. It's a dumb idea. Wonder Woman and Superman, yes, they're powerful. Yes, they're worried about hurting those they love and keeping their secret identity, and it's hard. But what makes them human, humanized, because they're not human, is their human relationships with human beings.
Exactly, exactly. And so this seems like it's two godlike creatures becoming godlike creatures and looking down on all us puny earthlings from afar and laughing.
And how can you relate as someone who doesn't like Superman? You're not going to relate even more. This just adds to that argument of why Superman sucks. And you know how I feel about Superman. I love Superman. In fact, when I was driving to Braden's house to record the first episode, I was listening to Superman by Five for Fighting. And my goodness, I got a little emotional because I never understood. I mean, I like the song, but I haven't listened to it the way that I do now, with just the words and Superman feeling the burden of being the hero that he is and wanting to feel human and feel like he's normal. He hates that he can fly in the song because it makes him different. And listening to that song and then seeing this, just, you know what, this is not who Superman is. I'm sorry.
And it's not who Wonder Woman either.
Exactly. It's not who Wonder Woman is. And I hope it gets trashed in a year. I'm sure it will. So I'm going to give Justice League and explore it just because I don't like the kiss and the beginning was awful with David Graves. But the middle part was fantastic. So, yeah, explore it. It was a good issue. But please, please change the kiss. Please do not let that last.
Hey,
anyway, Now New Dead Guardians. Now it's Braden's turn.
Let's talk. I got a couple awesome titles to tell you all about here. New Dead Guardians. If you're not buying it, wait for the trade because it's amazing. Adults, please buy this. There is some adult content in it. But, oh my gosh.
Not for the kiddies.
It's not for the kiddies, but man, for someone who wants a well-written and deeply developed story, New Dead Guardians hits it out of the park every month. There's two issues left. I don't know what they're going to do with those two issues. There are still so many questions I need answered, but the dialogue is perfect. It's pitch perfect. The art gets better with every single issue. I just love it. It's a great book. So I adored it.
Really? Well, there you go.
Without a doubt.
Well, let's go Phantom Lady and the Doll Man.
In perfect juxtaposition to how much I adored the New Dead Guardians, I really hated this book, and I wanted to like it because it looked like a cool idea. And the first few pages are really good, as we're seeing the Phantom Lady's powers, and she's explaining what her powers are in the narration boxes. It's pretty cool. But then it all just falls apart. There's a very stereotypical DC origin story in that her parents get murdered in front of her. And then, you know, she's like trying to bring down this crime family by exposing them and sleeping with the son of the crime family, blah, 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 blah. Book suck. Don't buy it. Ignore it. It's one of four. And I was like, oh, sure. I'll buy a mini series of four. Nope. I'll save my other $9 and not even buy issues 2 through 4.
Go buy something else like Godzilla.
Yeah.
Or Punk Rock Jesus.
Or Punk Rock Jesus or America's Got Powers, which I'll talk about in a little bit here.
Yeah. I know what Braden's going to say, and I'm actually going to pick it up now because of his review. So look forward to that in like 10 minutes. So let's go to IDW with Ghostbusters. This is Ghostbusters number 12. It is the last part four of a four-part series where they're touring America. And last month was in New Orleans, which was a fun issue. This one takes place in Seattle. Look, this is just another solid, solid issue into the Ghostbusters comic line. The thing I love about this is they really pay homage to the Seattle music roots, because we all know Nirvana, Pearl Jam, they started in the grunge era in Seattle.
Soundgarden's also a Seattle original.
So who is the ghost in this? A Seattle musician who is kind of funny because he had this lover who I'm guessing was a witch. They guess that she is. They don't specifically say that she is, but it looks like, yeah, she's a witch and she's jilted. And so she does a curse on him, and the band he was in, they weren't that good. But then there's just one song that he just was on the tip of his tongue. It was like a dream that you can't quite remember. And he's always tried to figure it out. And then he finally did. And when he's on stage playing it, he ends up burning up and what is it called? Spontaneous combustion.
Nice.
And so his ghost is this fiery ghost that just spontaneously erupts things as it's playing music and trying to finish the song. And so it was just a fun, fun issue. The one thing that I love the most is because we know that they're all scientists except for Winston. And they're a little arrogant, especially Peter and Egon. And they're all trying to figure out, because the ghost is not reacting how it normally would or should to their beams. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to figure out what we can do, blah, blah, blah. Well, Winston is the one that comes up with the solution. And, of course, I love Egon's response by saying, well, I eventually would have figured it out because, you know, science and logic and whatever. And I just love Winston just smiling and just kind of taking it in that he's the one to figure it all out. Just one of those classic Ghostbuster feels to it. I want to give an explore it. It was a fun issue. And as I've always said, if you're a Ghostbusters fan, pick it up. So now next up on IDW, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles micro series. with April. So this is what they do with the micro series, is they do individual characters.
Aren't they basically one-shot issues?
Yeah, they kind of tie into the main storyline, and they kind of tie in a little bit together. But yeah, they're basically one-shot issues of each character. And last month's with Casey Jones, micro series number 6, was fantastic. The artwork and the writing were phenomenal. The thing is with the micro series, they actually change artists and writers every month. So the one with April, the one that I'm reviewing right now, number 7, was not even close to being as good quality as last month with Casey Jones. April is different in this new relaunch because she is a scientist. She is not a reporter, and she works for Stock Gen Research Incorporated, which I haven't read the beginning Ninja Turtles. I'm going to get them a trade paperback, but it seems like that they were involved with the creation of the Ninja Turtles and other humanoid beings that are introduced into the story. And so she works for them, and so she's trying to figure out more and more how their involvement is. And so this is her being a detective because she can't fight because she doesn't know how. And so she's now doing the whole mental approach, which I do like that aspect. It was fun to see in a Ninja comic book series someone being a detective. But it just wasn't – it wasn't interesting. It was a little bland. It was just dry, and I don't know. I'm going to give it and ignore it.
It's too bad.
It really is, because I think April is a really interesting character, especially now. But it just – yeah, it didn't work for me. The artwork was just okay. The one thing at the end, they introduced a new creature, which I think looks really cool. And it kind of reminds me of one of the creatures in Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze. Mm-hmm. So I'm really intrigued by that, but yeah, I'm going to ignore it. It was a little, not a little, it was a big letdown, so.
That's too bad.
Anyway, let's move on to Image.
Okay, I have 3 Image books to talk about, all of which are pretty good to great. The first one I'm going to talk about actually came out last week. It's America's Got Powers issue 3, but they had all 3 issues at my store, and I've seen it on the wall for months because the first issue came out in April and the second came out in May, so they've been sitting on that wall for months and months and months, and I'd walk past them every single week and think, huh, that's a stupid title. But this week I decided to take the plunge and finally buy the first 3 issues, and did not disappoint. For those of you who don't know what this premise of the book is, a cosmic event causes about 5,000 young people to have powers in the San Francisco area. And so they apparently started some riots. There were some problems. So the government has sponsored this TV show called America's Got Powers, which is essentially a reality show meets American Gladiators with all of these superpowered teenagers starring in it. And all of them who were children of the crystal that they're called, they all have the powers, they all live on Alcatraz, where the show is shot and all this kind of stuff. And it's basically about this one specific child who has no powers. His twin brother was one of the big fighters in the early seasons of the show and was actually killed in the season finale of last season. And long story short, he accidentally ends up expressing some powers in the first issue. There's been a lot of really great twists and turns. It's been a really fun juxtaposition of superhero excitement and comedy and parody on our reality TV obsessed culture. And there's a great, great twist at the end of issue 3. And again, this is a limited series. It's a 6-issue series. And I am really excited to see where the last 3 issues go. I feel like it's a very solid series. And I really can't wait for the next 3 issues. I'm going to give it, I think this morning I gave it an explore it, but I think in retrospect, I'm going to give it an adore it. I really enjoy this series, and you should all be reading it.
Well, the great thing is I was turned off by the title because I didn't know what it was about. But then when you know it's a reality TV show, it makes perfect sense because you have America's Got Talent, you have American Idol, and so
yeah, I mean, it's clearly playing parody-wise off of those, and it's a really interesting book. I really enjoy it. There's like class issues, there's status issues, and there's a lot of interesting social commentary mixed into a really great superhero book / parody book. So there's a lot going on, and it's really, really worth your time and your effort. Next up, issue 2 of Debris is gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous to look at. Riley Rossmo's art is stunning. It's still not a perfect book, but it's a pretty good book. I'd give it an explore it. If you're looking for a great post-apocalyptic comic book, this is a wonderful place to go. It's gorgeous to look at. It's well written. It's got a lot of great action. It's built a pretty compelling storyline. And yeah, I'll give it an explore it. You should probably check it out if you like post-apocalyptic things.
There you go. Now, last up of the Image, Prophet and Brayden, does it continue the great, amazing streak that it's had before?
Oh boy, does it ever. I was initially, I thought to myself, hey, what's going on here? Because it jumped in price from $2.99 to $3.99 with this issue. But there's A, there's extra pages in this issue. B, I don't care if they want $3.99 for this every month, because it's the best book on the shelves, maybe.
Really?
Is it your top three? I feel compelled to say that it is definitely in my top three, if not the book I look forward to very most every single month.
Wow.
This is just another stellar addition to a great storyline. The last two issues have been an ongoing storyline that have tied in together about Old Man Prophet, the original John Prophet from the 90s series. You don't have to have read the 90s series to know that. You pick all this up through the reading. It's beautiful to look at. It's wonderfully written. It's a unique book. If you haven't read it, go to your comic book store tomorrow, or today if you're listening early enough in the day and still open, and go buy the brand new trade paperback that came out last week. It's got six issues in it. It's only $9.99. It's the best deal you can buy at your comic store. So go buy it, and you too will be converted.
Well, there you go. I don't know anything about Prophet until we started doing the podcast with Brayden, and I'm actually wanting to check it out, because every single time an issue comes out,
every month it's the best book I pick up every month.
Yeah, Brayden just gushes and gushes over this. All right, now let's move on to Marvel. So, Avenging Spider-Man, the 50th anniversary of Spider-Man issue. Brayden, what are your thoughts?
It was written by Zeb Wells, and Zeb Wells writes a great Peter Parker.
He does. And really I feel like Aunt May with this one, too.
And Aunt May was the best I think I've ever seen her in the original, the Universe 616, the normal Marvel universe. Because she was a little feistier and a little more a little more spirited than we usually see her.
She was giving Peter Parker crap.
Yeah,
the whole issue.
She was a little more, not quite to the level of Ultimate Universe Aunt May, who is a bamf. She's like the meanest old lady you'll ever meet. But she definitely has some zazz, and I liked the writing. However, it must be stated, the art by Steve Dillon just did not do it for me.
It was rough, and I'm surprised that they had him do the artwork for an issue that is commemorating 50th anniversary of Spider-Man.
Yeah,
because
in a lot of them, Aunt May looks like a zombie vampire creature.
Oh yeah,
it just
part where after the funeral, where she's saying, you know, I don't want him to. I don't want to have another moment with him, because it'd be hard, because I'd always want more, blah, blah, blah. And then after the funeral, she's in her room crying, calling herself a liar, because she said, I would want him for another moment, and I wobble. You know, it's something very tender. And instead, you're looking at it, and Aunt May has vampire red eyes, and it looks like that she has fangs because the tears are going down her face.
Yeah,
and
she looks,
she's in all black.
Yeah.
So it looks traumatic. Like, it was bad. And then a couple pages later, Spider-Man saving this old couple.
And she also looks like a zombie.
Yeah, which I was confused, because the old guy has blood on his shirt. And it was like, did she attack him? Are these guys part of a group? I don't understand. It was bizarre. Like,
it was well written, but I just didn't like the art. So ultimately, I'll probably give it an ignore it.
I am definitely giving it an ignore it. It was so hard. Nothing emotionally resonated with the work.
It just didn't
work. The artwork, yeah.
Just didn't
really work. Too bad. So next up, Captain Marvel.
Let's talk about something where everything worked, which is the book Captain Marvel.
Oh my goodness. Let's just talk about the art at first, because some people have not liked the art well.
Those people are crazy.
This is one of the prettiest looking books I am reading currently. Everything about it just looks pristine and beautiful, and it's very different in contrast to anything else you read in a superhero comic book.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It works.
Oh, yeah.
So
Dexter Soy, two thumbs up, man.
Oh, yeah. But then still, Kelly Dudikonic. I mean, if you want to get us started.
And in terms of the writing, I will save my biggest elegies to her writing for the hero moment of the week. But every moment of this, it just feels authentic. The dialogue feels real. And I love every word that comes out of Carol Danvers' mouth.
And I love the female and the woman squad that she's
Banshee.
With.
The Banshee. Oh, the Banshees are great.
Yep.
Anyway, it's a great book. It's on issue 3. If you're not buying it, you're making a huge mistake. So go buy it.
Look, Captain Marvel is my top 5 every month.
Mine
every
too.
Month. And this story gets better and better every single issue. And you don't. Anyway, I remember thinking, oh, issue 1 was awesome. I don't get issue 2 will probably be the same. No, issue 2 is better. And then I think,
and
okay,
issue 3 is the best so far.
Yep, it's everything. And then what I love at the end is that, so the Banshees, the female squad that she's with, they're learning how to draw, and one of their group members died in issue 2, and she was the artist, and she was teaching the other squad members to be artists and draw. Mm-hmm. And so at the end, they have one of their comics of Captain Marvel, or Captain Marvelous, and it looks very 50s, and it just,
it's
cool to see what their product is that they talk about in the comic book issue before it. So I, total adore it. Love Captain Marvel.
Yeah,
cannot get enough.
It's a solid, solid book every single month. Well, came out twice this month. I'm just, next issue wraps up this arc, and I'm just excited to finish it up. It's really great.
Yeah. All right, now on to the Infernal Man thing.
All right, a little bit of background on the Infernal Man thing. This is a limited series that was written by Steve Gerber back in the 80s. He used to be one of the original writers of Man-Thing back in the 70s. He wrote, I think it's issue 14 of the Man-Thing monthly, and it's called The Song Cry of the Living Dead Man. And it's a really bizarre story about this man who's plagued by these demons because he doesn't feel like he should live. He feels like his life is useless. Anyway, he eventually came back in the 80s to work for Marvel again and wrote a sequel called The Screenplay of the Living Dead Man. And he started working with an artist named Kevin Nolan who wanted to paint every single panel and every page. And so he started working on it, but eventually Steve Gerber died, things fell apart, and it never got finished until this year. And finally, 20-something years after it was written, they finished this limited series, the 3 issues, and it's beautiful to look at. It's perplexing to read. I'm glad that I have it, if only to say that I have it. It's an interesting treatise on insanity and on mental breakdown and on all that kind of stuff, and I really liked it. But I would probably give it an explore it to the average reader. This is, it wasn't easy reading by any means, but it was, I enjoyed it. I'm glad that I read it.
Now, the thing that he reminds me a lot of Swamp Thing with how he looks.
He's very different from Swamp Thing in how he acts, though. Swamp Thing is still, in his heart, Alec Holland. And he functions as a human being. He can talk, he can communicate, he can feel emotions on a human level. Man-Thing, however, is purely a creature of instinct and is fully controlled by sensing emotion around him, and he hates the emotion fear and is drawn to it to try to eradicate it, which seems weird since he's terrifying looking, but you know, whatever works. Anyway, he's very different in terms of his behavior from Swamp Thing, and I think that it's an interesting juxtaposition of the two.
Yeah, that is cool. Now let's move on to Versus.
I've talked to in the past how much I like this book. I didn't like this issue. It was 2 fights. The first one was Hawkeye versus Angel. I didn't feel like, and it's even written by Matt Fraction, but I didn't feel like either of them were acting in character. And so, I just didn't like it very much. It was just okay. Hawkeye won the battle, for what it's worth.
The thing that I don't like is, because Black Panther and Storm, fight in this.
That's the second fight. Black Panther versus Storm, which also doesn't work. Jason Aaron didn't draw me in well enough. I didn't like this issue.
No, and why do married couples or couples in general in comic books always have to get divorced? Why?
I don't know.
And it just drives me nuts because you have, and we talked about this in our previous set or our previous recorded episode, is you have Peter Parker and Mary Jane, who actually love each other, having to forget about each other for stupid editorial reasons. But then you have Reed Richards and Sue Storm still married when Reed Richards is a total tool.
Yeah.
And just an idiot.
I don't get it. It
drives me nuts. Anyway, moving on to...
I'm ignoring it this week or this month. Other issues, it's been good. This one was a bad one.
There you go. So totally ignore... I'm wondering if the writers just kind of throw one in because it's supposed to be a fighting thing anyway and they're doing other projects, like whatever.
Yeah, it felt like a phone-in to me, but whatever.
Just too bad. All right, Winter Soldier issue 9.
This, however, was not Brubaker phoning it in. This is Brubaker at his best.
This is, I was saying last week how I want to have a moment of silence for myself because he won't be writing Winter Soldier anymore. And if you laughed at that or not, you know what? That's actually legit now because this issue was amazing and I'm even more just saddened and downtrodden by the fact that Ed Brubaker is leaving because Bucky Barnes has become one of my favorite heroes in the Marvel Universe. In fact, I like him more than Captain America, which I never thought I would do. But he is just phenomenal in this story arc. And the thing that I love the most is Bucky Barnes has always been fighting against old Russian scientists or old Russian or German leaders and scientists or whatever it is. But in Leo Novikov, he has an actually legit arch villain, kind of like Batman has Joker, Superman Lex Luthor, Spider-Man, Green Goblin, and Venom. Bucky Barnes has Leo Novikov.
Yeah, it's a good comparison.
And I Leo is just ruthless and vile.
Yeah.
I love it.
And we'll talk in my villain moment of the week. I'll talk about what happens at the end because it's a pretty big thing that happens at the end.
Yeah, and I'm so sad that Ed Brubaker's leaving. And wow, the thing that I just loved in the beginning of this issue was, because we always think of secret agents always getting, you know, the hand-to-hand combat action and mm-hmm. saving the day and getting the girl. And then it starts off with Bucky Barnes being so frustrated that haven't done anything for the last 3 or 4 days because all they're doing is analyzing the same information over and over again. And I thought that was a great thing that Ed Brubaker added to it because it's true. There is so much downtime with agencies and being a secret agent. And I just thought, would other writers really add that in there? I don't know, but I think Ed Brubaker really nails the whole spy espionage feel.
Oh, so. For sure. Okay, my last Marvel book was Extreme X-Men. For those of you who didn't hear last time, it's a multiverse epic. It's got Dazzler from the normal Marvel universe. It's got Kid Nightcrawler. It's got an alternative Wolverine, Captain James Howlett of the Canadian 131st. It's got Emmeline Summers Frost, who is a member of the New Albion X Society, and the disembodied head of Charles Xavier, severed in a bottle.
Which I think is so weird.
Yeah, it's a weird book, but this was a better issue than the first issue. I feel like it's maybe it's hitting a stride a little bit. I'm really excited to see where it goes, but I'll give it an explore it. If you don't like X books, or if you're not a Dazzler fan, it's probably not for you. But I really like Dazzler, so I think that I'll give it a thumbs up. And I hope that it continues to be good and that she continues to assert herself as a character worth remembering why she's around. But yeah, I'd give it an explore.
There you go. So now let's move on to Valiant, X-Men of War number 4. Brayden, does it keep up the momentum of issues 1 through 3?
I felt like it definitely culminated the storyline well. I felt like it was a great end to a very solid arc. And I'm very excited to see where it goes from here. That scene where he suddenly, by the armor, is told that he's been gone for 1,600 years, and everything he knows is dead, and everyone he knows is gone, and his people, the Visigoths, don't even exist anymore. That's a sobering moment, and I just thought it was a great issue. Also, the revelation that there are some of the aliens, the Vine aliens, living on Earth under human guise, or humans with Vine alien brains in them. Who knows? All I know is that it was a really, really solid issue. I really enjoyed it. How'd you feel about it?
Yeah, it was my least favorite of the four. For some reason, I can't even put my finger on it. It wasn't as interesting to me when he was in modern times as it was when he was in the Roman times and when he was on that Vine colony ship as a slave. I really liked that feel with the mixture of old with new technology. And I don't know, it wasn't as interesting to me. That being said, the whole fact that the Vines have some way infiltrated Earth and are involved in it, I'm going to keep coming back because this is a great series. And with my complaints of issue 4, does not mean that I didn't like issue 4 or that it's ruined the rest of the previous issues for me. I still really liked it, but it just, to me, was the weakest of the four. So I'm going to give an explore it, but I'm still going to keep following this series because it is so much fun.
It is, and I still think it's probably Valiant's best book so far.
Oh, yeah, and Ninjak in issue 5.
Looks like it should be fun.
Oh, he's going to be great. So, but Brayden, what do you give it?
I think I still will stick with an explore it. It's not the best comic I bought this week, but it's good.
Yeah.
It's solid.
Exactly. Well, there's our reviews, and as you've just listened to, we got through a lot of them. But stay tuned because we'll do our hero and villain moments of the week, plus from the archives and our webcomic of the week. All right, welcome back. Here we are to our hero moment of the week, our weekly segment that I personally love to do and look forward to it. I think
as do I.
So, Brayden, let's get us started.
What is
your hero moment of the week?
Mine comes from Captain Marvel, issue 3.
As it should.
She and the Banshees down one of these crazy alien Kree jet fighters or spaceships, and she pulls the hatch open, and the pilot's Japanese. And so she pulls him aside and says, "You speak any English?" He says, "Some." She says, "Great. This is what I want you to do. I want you to go back to your camp and gear up. Put together a squad of the very best you've got. The best pilots, the best equipment, the best vehicles. Make sure everybody's fed and rested and has their head right. And when you're sure that you've got together the winningest hand you've got, the moment you're absolutely certain and not one second before, I want you to lead that team back here. Because when my gals and I hand you your asses, which we most certainly will do, I want you to know that beyond any shadow of a doubt, it could not possibly have gone any other way. Now go."
Could you have written that any better?
No.
To convey in 5 or 6 sentences what makes Carol Danvers Carol Danvers?
No, I couldn't have. So, hats off, Kelly Sue DeConnick, for capturing in 3 panels why I love Carol Danvers.
Oh, it was, because I'm new to Carol Danvers. I didn't know her. I knew who she was, but I didn't know that much about her before. And even I knew when I read that, oh my goodness, that's Carol in a nutshell.
This lady's awesome.
It was great. Beautiful. Well, my hero moment of the week has to be Steven Trevor telling off Wonder Woman. And look, I'm going to preface this by saying, if you don't read Wonder Woman and this is your only exposure to Wonder Woman, this is not Wonder Woman. So
No.
Initially, I would be mad at him telling her off because I love Wonder Woman, but this isn't Wonder Woman. This is just some phony, lame copy of Wonder Woman. So it's okay. And the thing as well is we've all been jilted lovers at one point in our lives. At least most of us have. I know I have. And whenever someone breaks up with you in a really nasty, stupid way, you always want to tell them off. But for me personally, I don't. I don't know why. I just don't. I don't be the mean guy. I don't want to be that crazy ex or whatnot. So I keep my peace. And then afterwards, I think, no, I should have said exactly how I feel because they need to hear it. And that is exactly what Steven Trevor does. And I'm just going to give a little brief thing. They're in the hospital. He just got total hammered by David Graves. And Wonder Woman comes in to his room, and it's just them, and she holds his hand. And you could tell that he thinks that she maybe realized through the whole event of what just happened that maybe she loves him, wants to get back together. But then she says the words to him, "This was my fault." And as soon as that happens, he pulls his hand away and he goes on a tirade. And let me just read this. "You're not doing this again, are you, Wonder Woman? I thought you were far enough away, but I should have known better. After what happened to Barbara, Tyler, sorry, Stephen Trevor, what happened to Barbara Minerva wasn't your fault either. The cheetah." And then Wonder Woman says, "You nearly died, Steve. And this is where it gets good. Because now I think he feels like he's being patronized and just totally disrespected. "I've nearly died 100 times, Diana. I'm a government agent. And I was out in the field protecting the world long before I met you." And then Wonder Woman says, "But this time you were tortured and beaten and almost killed because of our relationship." To which he retorts, "Our relationship? What relationship? You ended it. You threw it away. Though our relationship has been over a computer over the last year."
Oh.
And the thing that I love about that is here she is trying to be, I feel like she's being fake with her caring or whatnot. Not that it's not sincere, but it's just, it's patronizing him. And he throws it back in her face and calls her out in it. For any jilted lover out there currently or been before, this is what you've always wanted to do as a person. This is your moment, and that's why it's my hero moment of the week. I loved it. So, there you go.
Pretty solid.
Yeah, so now let's go to our villain moment. Brayden, what was your villain moment?
Okay, well, at the end of Winter Soldier, we find out that because they think they've rescued Natasha and broken her mind control. No. There was always more to Leo Novikov's plan. And it ends with three panels of carnage, and Natasha is loose, murdering S.H.I.E.L.D. agents under mind control on the helicarrier. And that is a sobering place to end the issue. And I don't know if there's going to be much coming back from this, because I don't know what's going to happen between Bucky and Natasha. I don't know if there'll be any coming back after this level of betrayal, even if it was under mind control. So I think that this could have potential ramifications to the overall series, but it's just three brutal images. The last one has Nick Fury himself, the man, the myth, the legend, laying in a pool of blood. Whether he's dead or whether he's been knocked unconscious, who knows? But all I know is that it was interesting. I'm eager to see where it goes.
Oh, exactly. And I hope that, look, we have enough couples breaking up. We don't need them to break up either.
Amen. Okay, you so know? What was yours, my friend?
And mine has to be in Green Lantern Annual with the Guardians, especially Ganthet, because Ganthet is the one Guardian, and also Saith, but they were the ones who had emotion. And now Ganthet has gone a total 180 degree turn. He's now evil, and you don't get a sense of how evil he is until this moment I'm about to share. As I was saying in the review of Green Lantern, there are two different Guardians. There's the ones that we know of who lead the Corps, and there are the other ones who they still think the Manhunters are fighting, you know, protecting the universe.
Yeah.
And so they're way out of it. They haven't communicated at all, obviously. And they're the ones guarding the original Green Lantern. And so when Ganthet and his other cronies go to talk to the other Guardians about seeing and releasing the first Green Lantern, the ones who've been guarding him obviously get very upset and try and object and whatnot. And while they're now arguing, it leads to a fight, and there's powers everywhere. It's really cool looking, but this is the thing. And it happens during the time that Sinestro and Hal Jordan are fighting Black Hand. Both things are happening simultaneously in the comic, and they're saying their oath, the Green Lantern oath that we all know and love, that's so iconic. And during that moment, they show a panel of Ganthet sneaking up behind one of the Guardians, who are the prison guards for the original Green Lantern, using the Green Lantern energy to create a knife and stab it in his neck. And
jeez, that's like, nasty.
That is now, this is why it's devastating to me. I love Ganthet. He created the Blue Lantern Corps. He's the one that led St. Walker, that created Hope. He is the one that even though Hal Jordan as a human destroyed everything that they believed in and they created, went to another human with Kyle Rayner and asked him to be another Green Lantern. And now Ganthet has gone totally the other way. And no matter what happens, he will always, in my mind, just be flawed, and I will never look at him the same after that.
Yeah, there's no coming back from that.
There isn't. He murdered another Guardian, even though it wasn't one of the people he works with on a day-to-day basis. Still, they all had the same mission, and Yeah, that's my hero moment of the week for sure. I'm still devastated by it. Yeah, sorry, villain moment of the week. Still devastated. I can't even think right, obviously. So
it's nasty.
I don't know. Well, yeah, now let's go to the archives. And this is a really cool book that Braden's about to share with us.
Yes. It's the second of the Cerebus collected editions. For those of you who don't know, Cerebus was a long-running independent comic put out by Dave Sim. He ran it for 300 issues, which I think is a record for the amount of issues run by a person and with no company attached. He created his own company and produced them himself and sold them himself. He didn't print through any smaller publishers or anything at all. And the book that I'm talking about today is called High Society. It's the second collected edition. It's issues 26 through 50 of the Cerebus series. And it's big. It's really, really big. Who Cerebus is, he is an aardvark barbarian. The Earth Pig, as they often call him, because he's an aardvark. He is basically a riff on Conan the Barbarian, and the early issues are usually one-and-dones or two-part issues that just build on this, making fun of different tropes of comic books. You know, he makes fun of barbarian and sorcery comics, because there's all sorts of stupid wizards. There's Red Sophia, who's just like Red Sonja, and so she jokes about how her chainmail bra and chainmail thong give her chafing issues, and... There's a character who's like the Tick, who calls himself the Bug or something like that. There's this evil scientist who creates a swamp thing and a man thing, but man thing is really a woman thing, and then they start mating, and it's filled with funny things about, especially about 70s and 80s comics. But everything kind of mutates when you get to issue 26, where High Society starts. And it tells this 25-issue story about Cerebus being perceived as an advisor to the king in the city of Iest, which is the largest city in the world. And so suddenly he's being given all this power and given all this money, and you see how he as a character changes as he's given all these opportunities, as he's given money, as he's given power, as he's given prestige, and how he oftentimes changes for the worse. He becomes a much worse person than he was before. It's really fascinating. It's a fascinating detail on what power can do, how power corrupts, and how bureaucracies are ineffective. And all of these things culminate in the end when he basically becomes the ruler of the city-state. And then it also goes on in the next two volumes are called Church and State 1 and Church and State 2, where he also tries to aspire to the power of controlling the church as well as the city-state. So he's trying to put himself in as Pope while he's still working as the king of this. Yeah, anyway, it's really complicated and it's really dense, but it's really, really good. It's one of my favorite. Now, granted, you should read the first half of Cerebus up through the Melmoth collected edition, and then you don't need to read the second half, because that's when it got weird. Dave Sim has some real problems with misogyny. He really hates women, and I don't know whether it came from bad breakups or what caused him to have such like vile feelings towards women, but he really hates them. And you don't see it much in the first half of the book, but in the second half of the book, it comes out prominently, and it's almost used as a platform to deliver tracts about why men are great and women are so evil and men are strong and women are so weak and all this kind of stuff. So you can avoid that half of the series. I only own the first half because it's where it was good. But really, everyone should go out and buy or read High Society, because it is so complex and so detailed and multi-layered and multifaceted, and it's just a wonder to behold.
Well, and it sounds like such a cool concept.
It's just really, really fun. It's a very good book. It's not, and again, it's not the kind of book that you can sit down and read in an afternoon. It's going to take you a couple weeks to get through.
Yeah, well,
part of it's because it's so long, but part of it's just because it's so dense thematically.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to our webcomic of the week, and this is something I just discovered. It's our valued customers, and it's at our valued customers. blogspot.com. It's written by, let's see here, Tim Chamberlain. And wow, this is actual just one panel snippets of things that people really say at his comic shop that he works at. And Braden, you've read this before, I think, right?
Yes, I've been following it for a few months. I think it's a hilarious, hilarious comic because, you know, these are real interactions that he's overheard as he worked in a comic store. And he's just simply put a face to it. And
they're ugly.
He's just presented it to us for the giggles.
So I'll read the first one. It's a guy in a Punisher shirt and he's shaved head. He looks kind of like a skinhead, actually.
Yeah.
And he says, "Sometimes I hope something horrible happened to me so I could go and kill people like the Punisher does." It's like, really? Who says that out loud?
And
who,
seriously.
You know? And then this other one, they're talking about the Superman, Wonder Woman kiss in Justice League 12. Someone going, "Psh, they always make all the lesbian characters have to kiss dudes. New 52 sucks." Which, look, Wonder Woman, she is a lesbian.
Yeah.
So that person has a little bit valid, but still. It's not every lesbian has to kiss dudes. Batwoman does not kiss dudes. I'm sorry.
At least not yet.
Yeah, not yet. The other one I love is this guy. He's talking to someone on the phone. He's told, "I ain't eating no Chinese food. I only eat regular food." And then someone else.
Oh, it's so bad.
Let's do one more. This one's talking about Power Girl's new costume. Wow. Now Power Girl looks like one of those generic superheroes that goes to schools and tells kids to floss their teeth.
It's you like, know I'm with that person all the way, dear listeners. I agree.
Yeah. It's just a great webcomic. I love it. So anyway.
Yeah. Ourvaluedcustomers.blogspot.com. Check it out. It's really solid.
Yeah. So that's our podcast episode of the week. We'll also be looking forward. We're going to start a new segment where we do our pull list. Two things that we're each looking forward to the most that will come out on Tuesdays, so it'll get you all prepared for Wednesday on Comic Book Day.
Yeah,
and
we're really excited about those. They'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at BTWNBBLS.
Like us on Facebook.
You can email us at talk@betweenthebubbles.com or me, Darren, Darin, @betweenthebubbles.com, Braden, Braeden, @betweenthebubbles.com. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you agree with our reviews, other comics that we're not reading that we should check out. And, yeah, until next time, until next week, happy reading.
Hey, Between the Bubbles is a production of Almost Midnight Media and is released under a Creative Commons license.